Broadcasting live from the Capital OTB studios, this is Racing Across America with Seth Merrow.
Good morning. Welcome to Racing Across America on this Saturday morning. I am Seth Merrow. Thanks for joining us. A little bit later on, we will be joined by Ellis Starr, national racing analyst from Equibase. We're going to take a look with Ellis at some of the stakes action at Belmont today. Really nice stakes card at Belmont, so we'll get some of his thoughts on those races. A little bit after that, we taped the interview with Ellis yesterday, but a little bit after that, we'll be joined live by summertime colleague Steve Bick. We do Loose on the Lead up at Saratoga, but also Steve, of course, the host of Sirius and XM's At the Races. That means he was down at Churchill in the 2 weeks leading up to the Derby. He'll be down at Pimlico this week leading up to the Preakness. But typically the day after the Derby, we'll do a little recap of some of the action. And last week I was just under the weather on Sunday, so I didn't get in, but I thought we'd plug Steve in and get some of his thoughts on the action down at Churchill last Friday and Saturday, Oaks and Derby Day, as he was live down there. And now this week he's had the opportunity to get some follow-ups with some of the connections and whatnot. So Steve Bick towards the bottom of the hour as well. So nice show for today. Let me hit you with some of the promos coming up today here at the Clubhouse Racebook. There is a trifecta challenge. If you come on down, you can enjoy all the racing and maybe have a little fun with the $100 trifecta challenge today here at the Racebook, 711 Central Avenue in Albany. There's also a $100 online knockout challenge. Check out the website for that fun this afternoon. And tomorrow, once again at the Racebook, the Play the Board Handicapping Contest. And once again, you can come down, enjoy all the racing action, and maybe have some fun with the Play the Board Handicapping Contest as well. That's tomorrow. Clubhouse Racebook, 711 Central Avenue in Albany. I'll hit you with just some news and notes before we jump into the action. We mentioned it already on the Handicapper Support. If you watched the stakes show earlier, we recorded the stakes preview, Mike Callahan and I, yesterday, and it was just before the news came out on risk-taking. So we were talking about risk-taking, but just now on the Handicapper's Report, we mentioned it. I will reiterate, risk-taking scheduled to be scratched from today's Peter Pan and instead head to the Preakness next week. So he adds a little juice to the Preakness. Obviously, you're going to have the Baffert Horses, Medina Spirit, and Concert Tour. We mentioned earlier on the Handicapper's Report, Wayne Lucas intending to send Ram, winner last week, down at Churchill to the Preakness as well. Rombauer is looking to maybe show up in the Preakness. So it could be an interesting field. We'll see how it shapes up. I believe entries are pulled on Monday, if I'm not mistaken. So we'll know in a couple of days how it will all shape up heading to the Preakness a week from today. I mentioned it on the Handicapper's Report earlier. Wesley Ward scored his 2,000th career training win Thursday evening on the Twilight card down at Churchill. He won with Gold for Kitten in the sixth race. 2,000 wins for Wesley Ward. But it was kind of interesting. The follow-up articles I'll mention, it was his 2,000th win, but the way the records are kept, it's North American races, and it didn't include four races that he won with thoroughbreds and races that were open to quarter horses. Those don't count, I guess, for some reason. But also didn't include Wesley Ward was estimating in the article I read he had won 20 races in France and England, but 11 of those were at Royal Ascot. Seems like, I guess the record is just, you know, the numbers are kept for North American wins, but it seems like you should have your Royal Ascot wins kind of count for something in there. But regardless, 2,000 wins, a nice career achievement for Wesley Ward. And I pulled up, I don't know whether I printed it up, but here we go. I pulled up, folks may not remember, Wesley Ward at one time was not only a jockey. You look at Wesley Ward now, and it's hard to believe. Well, you look at Steve Asmussen now, it's hard to believe he was a jockey at one point. But you look at Wesley Ward and you think, and folks may not remember because it was a while ago. I remember it. But Wesley Ward was a jockey, not only a jockey, He was a pretty good jockey. In 1984, Wesley Ward won the Eclipse Award for Apprentice Jockey. And I pulled up his career stats as a jockey. He won 749 races as a jockey, a career that went from 1984 to 1989. Although he had some overseas races, too, that I don't think are on here, as he tried to, you know, the weight issue. So he went overseas and was riding a little bit there as well. But eventually, you know, the weight caught up to him. But he's doing okay on the training side of things, as again, Wesley Ward winds up with a nice 2,000 career winner a few days, 2,000 and counting, as it were, for trainer Wesley Ward. All right, there's some news and notes. We will head to a break. When we come back, again, taped an interview yesterday with Ellis Starr, so we'll be joined by Ellis when we get back from the break, and a little bit later on, live with Steve Bick, we'll get some of his thoughts as he was down at Churchill in the lead-up and including Oaks and Derby Day. So we'll get some of his thoughts on the action last weekend at Churchill Downs. All of that when Racing Across America continues. Stay tuned.
Where's the best place to find your favorite teams, your favorite food, daily drink specials, and wagering on live horse racing? Legends Field Sports Bar, 711 Central Avenue, Albany. Get your game on day or night with 75 flat-screen TVs, tournament-style pool tables, a private banquet room, and live horse racing. So if someone asks you where's the best sports bar in the capital region, tell them Legends Field Sports Bar, inside the clubhouse racebook, 711 Central Avenue, Albany.
The Capital Region has some of the most sophisticated horse racing fans in the country. That's why Capital OTB built the Clubhouse Racebook. Here you can wager year-round on the best horse racing from around the world. The Clubhouse also has monthly promotions including live bankrolls, handicapping contests, and so much more. Like sports? Watch your favorite teams on more than 30 screens in Legends Field Sports Grill. Food, sports, and the excitement of championship horse racing only at the Clubhouse Racebook, 711 Central Avenue, Albany.
Capital OTB is now streaming live on Roku. The RTN Racing Channel on Roku lets you watch OTB TV live through your Roku device or your Amazon Fire Stick, rather than being limited to computers and mobile devices, which means you can now watch OTB live wherever you are. Simply open Roku, scroll to find the RTN channel, then click on OTB TV. OTB TV on Roku. Try it now.
Ellis Starr, he's the national racing analyst at Equibase. You can find his selections at various track websites, America's Best Racing, Twitter, at UberCapper. He's all over the place, and he's here this morning. Ellis, good morning.
Good morning, Seth. Good morning, racing fans.
Happy to have you on board. We'll talk a little of the Belmont Stakes action for this afternoon, because I know your featured race at Equibase is the Man of War, so we'll kick into that in a few. But before we do that, I want to go back to last week and just get some thoughts. It was really a fun weekend. A, it was just great to be back first Saturday in May, and the Friday before that, obviously, but back with fans, and even through the TV screen, you got the feeling of more excitement, obviously, than there was last year. But then the racing was great. A lot of ding-dong finishes right down to the wire. The dead heat with Colonel Liam and domestic spending. But Malathat looking really good in the Oaks. Medina Spirit getting it done in the Derby. I said to you when we were off the air, I had Mandaloon. And I thought Mandaloon was going to go by the entire stretch, but just could not get by Medina Spirit. Bob Baffert wins his seventh. Johnny Velasquez wins his fourth Derby. A great weekend for both of those with record breaks, and Velasquez getting the Oaks Derby double and another grade one with Gamine. What were your impressions on the weekend?
Well, first, as you're right, you know, back on the regular place in the calendar is phenomenal. And second, you know, for once in the last 6 years, except for last year when there was, you know, pandemic postponed and no fans Derby, I mean, it was phenomenal to have the weather we had. It was just unbelievable. You know, it snowed in central Kentucky 8 days before. So it was just great. And, you know, now the weather's been off and on since then. We just lucked out. And it was great racing. Good field, some excellent A races, some good battles, as you said, the Colonel Liam domestic spending battle. The Derby itself, you know, usually we all live and die by pace scenarios if we like this game. And, you know, pace scenario was, we thought Midnight Bourbon said they'd go, and Rock Your World was going to be forwardly placed. And then Rocky Royal comes out of the gate with the missing stirrup, for those that haven't seen the picture. And Rosario's worrying about getting his foot in the iron and gets pinched, and that's it. And Midnight Bourbon doesn't break, and Smith takes him back, and that's it. And then Medina Spirit runs pretty much the race he'd run in the Robert Lewis and the other two. He runs the same position around the track. You know, other people have said, hey, nobody ever passed him. And they're right, because he runs the same way. This time he ran it on the lead. I didn't see it. I thought he was a little slow on figures, but there's no underestimating a horse that gets out and gets his, you know, outruns his skin. I didn't say outruns his ability, but he ran very bravely, and when Mandolin came to him, Hot Rod Charlie pressured him, didn't matter. And that was, you know, all she wrote about that one. Just looking forward to the Preakness, and we've got some new shooters, and we'll see how it goes.
Toss out some other thoughts on the weekend. As they say, Malathat looked great in the Oaks. Going to be interesting to see. They're already talking, maybe facing the boys a little bit later in the season. I thought Maxfield had a good rebound from the performance in the Big Cap. Came back in the Ali Sheba. He looked good. She Dares the Devil looks good as a older filly and mare now in that division. And I thought Jackie's Warrior had one of the best performances of the weekend.
Yeah, he was back. I mean, that was just the same thing. You know, you thought sometimes getting beat like that and trying two turns takes a lot out of the horse, and they never come back to be the same. And Jackie's Warrior just dug in. And then you also have Gamine. You know, what a tremendous, no matter what you think of anything else, tremendous effort, kind of running off the screen, as Maxfield did. And you've got, you know, some good divisions to look forward to. The Filly and Mare Sprint Division, the Handicap Division with Maxfield, and then the Derby winners later in the year, Derby and Preakness winners. You know, the Turf Division with that great race in the Turf Classic. Really looks like there's some positives coming out of the Derby weekend. And Malathat, of course, as you mentioned, whether she goes against the Phillies or decides to take on the Belmont and try and do what Rags to Riches does, that would be great.
Yeah, we were at about this time last year, and I was saying the same thing. These divisions are really shaping up nicely this year, saying that last year. And unfortunately, as the year went along, it played out that way. There was some really great divisional battles, but the fans couldn't see it. This year, you know, knock wood, fingers crossed, things will open up a little bit, certainly as we get up to our venue in our neighborhood, Saratoga. We're definitely hoping for that. But they've already allowed some fans down at Belmont Park. That means some fans will be on hand for the Saturday stakes action. Really nice stakes card on Saturday, and let's jump into it. Let's kind of work our way backwards from the Man of War, which will wrap up the stakes action. It'll be the 10th race on the card on Saturday. Grade 1 event, $700,000 up for grabs, 1 3/8 on the turf. I'm going to take a little pop with Field Pass. I thought the Maker's Mark Mile was a good seasonal debut to build on. I think Sovereign, the Euro import, may wind up being the one to beat. But I pulled up a replay because I know this is your race of the week on Equibase. So I looked at that. I know you're taking a look at Gufo. I pulled up the Belmont Derby from last October, and Gufo will get it done here as the number two horse. Subsequently showed up in the Hollywood Derby to wind up the season and just missed by a snudge in there. But now comes back in as a four-year-old to face older horses for the first time. Give us your thoughts on that horse and the rest of them in the Man of War.
Well, it's a great race. You know, first of all, I'd love to see Sovereign, who was the 2019 Irish Derby winner, come back. You know, he's been off since November. He's now on the brown bar. Brown, like 30% with foreign imports. It's interesting, of course, because there's no Lasix. So most of the imports, you can't get a read on Brown's horses without Lasix, because they normally do come here for that. But this horse didn't seem like he had a problem, because his last race in Bahrain back in November was a neck defeat. You usually see a bad line when a horse comes to run in North America and the Lasix. That's not going to happen. Certainly, if he repeats his even the second place finish to the incomparable Mara Nabel last year in the King George and Queen Elizabeth Ascot, he could win. And of course, the Irish Derby. So it'll be interesting to see. Grade one, he's not coming back in a grade three. So yeah, but he's 8-5. He's on my list for certainly pick threes, pick fours. Field Pass, you mentioned, I'll work my way up. Also, no problem at all. And Field Pass is going to have a lot in common with my top pick, Gufo, because he ran against Smooth Like Straight a couple times. Smooth Like Straight, of course, ran pretty well when third in the Old Forester Turf Classic last weekend to domestic spending and
Colonel Liam.
Thank you, Colonel Liam. But anyway, but Gufo just has done nothing wrong. 5 wins, 2/3, and 8 races. That mile and a quarter last fall at Belmont. He's only going 1 3/8 here. He's a declaration of war, so I'm not too worried about that. Clement, really good. Coming back with horses 90 to 360 in Stats Raceland's Query Iran. And Rosario gets on. He's one on the turf at Belmont. Field Pass is the value, though, right? He's 6-1, as you mentioned, 6-17. He's really done nothing wrong. I mean, he ran a couple miles at the end of the year and the beginning of this year. He ran December, the Mathis brothers, beating the length in 3/4, and then came back in the Maker's Mark mile, which is really highly rated, and ran 4th after making a rally from 4th to 2nd. I think the longer distance is interesting. He's a lemon drop kid. And again, just I looked at a Stats Raceland stat because there's some sires just don't get. English Channel is number one. He's represented here by Channel Cat, who's got a shot after his Elkhorn runner up. But lemon drop kids do run okay. They're 4 for 15. 4 of 15 horses have won the last 5 years, going 11 to 16 furlongs in stakes. That's okay with me. And it's Mike Maker. And Luis Saez is riding, so certainly the value's there. But I'll bet Gufo here, maybe about 8 to 5 or more. I'm definitely going to make a win down field pass at about 3-1 or more. And we'll see how I play, but I'm going to use all three of them, plus Sovereign in pick 3 is pick 4.
Sounds good. Let's work our way back. One of the highlights of the afternoon will be the Peter Pan Grade 3 event. I said it when we did when we taped Mike Callahan and I our stakes preview this week. This is a race that traditionally second string may not be quite right. These are horses that maybe got a little bit of a later start or just had a hiccup along the way. But typically this race has some horses that are players in that three-year-old division as we move into the summer. I think that'll be the case again this year. The Peter Pan Grade 3 event, $200,000, the one-turn mile and an eighth down at Belmont. You and I were talking before we went on the air. We're taping on Friday, and the news just came out that it looks like risk-taking will be a scratch and will head to Baltimore to try the Preakness. Very interesting. That leaves a field of 5, and it's, I said on the stakes preview, I handicapped this before the morning line, and I was already a little bit disappointed. Well, now I think I'm going to lose even more value. I think Nova Rags is interesting. We're going to look at the stretch run to the Sam Davis. Number 9 is Candyman Rocket. Number 8 is Nova Rags. And I thought off of this race, the horse was interesting. I played some Derby future pools using Nova Rags. Subsequently ran 4th in the Florida Derby, though, so didn't make it to the Kentucky Derby. But I'll take a little pop on Saturday in the Peter Pan with Nova Rags. Again, I was hoping my value might be a little bit more, but in the 5-horse field, and if risk-taking is out and it is a 5-horse field, I think that value kind of disappears. But what are your thoughts on the Peter Pan?
Well, I was looking at a single race anyway, and I was looking to take a stand against risk-taking and Nova Rags, and I'm not going to get any value either with Promise Keeping, who's my Promise Keeper, who's my single in the race. He was 7-2 morning line. I'm expecting 2-1 now and probably 3-2 on Nova Rags. I mean, risk-taking and Nova Rags are both dropping out of Derby preps, risk-taking out of the Wood, Nova Rags out of the Florida Derby. But before that, Nova Rags, not to knock him, but he was 2nd the whole length of the stretch in Sam Davis, which did not turn out to be a productive race because Candyman Rocket, Hidden Stash haven't amounted to much. And I was trying to beat him. Promise Keeper is the now horse. I mean, he won that mile and an eighth at Keeneland, and I was there, and it was visually impressive. I mean, swept past is what the chart caller note was, and that's what it was. He just went 3rd, 1st, whoosh, and that was the longer stretch, not the short stretch. By 5, Saez rides him back. He's got a 103 echo base speed figure, which if Nova Rags, if risk taking it stayed in, he got a 102 in the Withers. So Promise Keeper already ran faster more recently, didn't have a bad race in between. Nova Rags got a 101 echo base figure off his Florida Derby effort. Promise Keeper's already faster. He's going to run better second time at a mile and an eighth, in my opinion. It's Pletcher. I'm looking at overtook the 1 to maybe get 2nd now because he's got that just past everybody late style. It's not an interesting race. Again, I'll probably bet Promise Keeper maybe 9-5 or better if I get it, but definitely a single in the pick 3s and pick 4s.
Yeah, interesting. And I said on our stakes preview, overtook to me is maybe a little bit interesting, a horse I left out of the mix. But at $1 million and Pletcher, if that one winds up offering the value in the field, I mean, I am the law is going to be the up against it long shot, but overtook is interesting. And you made the great point too about Nova Rags, and I should have tossed that in. I was hoping for some value as well in that. The Sam Davis, I like the Sam Davis, But yeah, Candyman Rocket, I don't know what happened to that horse. The two subsequent races just did not validate at all the Sam Davis, so I may be up against it a little bit.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't talk you often, but just have to say it, the company you've kept and what they've done versus that. So, and again, I was really hoping for 7-2, 3-1 even. And now you're going to get, like I said, 9-5, 8-5. I'm probably going to get 2-1. So it's tough. That's why the value is in the horizontal.
Yeah, as you say, maybe make a stand in there and find other spots around it. And maybe one of those spots will be back in race 7. It is the Vagrancy Handicap Grade 3 event for the ladies. $150,000 up for grabs as they will travel 6.5 furlongs. I'm going to use French Empire in here, and we're going to take a look at her last race down at Oaklawn. She'll be the number 2 horse here. And part of it is I like Oaklawn horses at this time of year. I think when they move away from Oaklawn as the meet ends, they tend to bring a little added fitness, it seems like, and run very well at their next venue. So that's attracting some of my attention with French Empire. She also comes in with a nice win streak. Beyond that, Pacific Gale, who has put in a couple of nice starts. After she won the Inside Information, John Kimmel was in the winner's circle afterwards and said, the owners were thinking about sending Pacific Gale to the breeding shed. I said, I think she has a little more gas in the tank. And so she has now a couple of very nice wins to validate that thought. So she's interesting as well. On Her Way, I think, could be a player at maybe a little bit of a price. 3-1 on the morning line, but I wouldn't be surprised if we got a little more value with On Her Way. But we'll see how it works out. Your thoughts in the Vagrancy.
So this is where I'm really taking a stand and look. I'm playing 2 pick 3 starting here. One's going to be very strong and singling French Empire. And the other, I will use Victim of Love, Pacific Gale, and French Empire. Let me start with them. Victim of Love won the race last year off of March to June layoffs, coming back off of February to May layoff this time when the race was later last year. It's a similar move. Rosario rides. That Vagrancy last year, which she set off the pace at 27-1, got a 109 figure. She regressed a little bit in the ballerina, but it was grade 1, not grade 3. And then she came back in February for a prep, ran second. She's been off since February, but again, she fires. She's been training okay at Penn, and of course, she doesn't run at Belmont much, but she's 1-1. Pacific Gale is just slower. I can't make the case. I'd like to complete take a stand against, play one ticket only with her on the pick 3. She's won the 2 in a row, the grade 2, the grade 3. She was 3rd last year, no factor, beating 6 in the Vagrancy. 104 last time out in the Hurricane Birdie. I could see completely tossing around, and I may by the time it comes time to make a bet. French Empire, not only has she won 4 in a row, she's got what we call a double advantage. No matter what kind of speed figures you use, double advantage is one where the horse's last 2 figures are better than either of the last 2 figures of every horse in the field. And I do look at both, but just the equipment-based figures, 106 and 110. As I said, Victim of Love's 109 was 3 back. So every other horse in the race is slower, and I don't see this filly getting any worse. And what I noticed was, very easy, if you see this, look at your PPC previously trained by Cipriano Contreras. I went to look at the owner line. Cipriano Contreras owned the horse. French Empire, a 6-year-old mare, was purchased privately by 10th Strike and some other people out of that race. Now, I don't know what you pay for a 6-year-old mare. But it's probably not a lot, but on the other hand, it's probably pretty good, and they're going to get 90,000 back if they win. I think everything points to French Empire winning her 5th in a row.
That's interesting, because I assumed that 10 Strike probably made the claim at Churchill last year. That's very interesting. 10 Strike, of course, is Marshall Graham, one of the big contest players and a guy who really studies, and his 10 Strike has become a really nice winning stable. That's very intriguing there. So I already had the horse on top, though, so you're just adding to my confidence level. Still have a couple minutes left, and I know we were talking beforehand, and we've mentioned picks in here. I know you looked at the 8th race, and so it's only a maiden special event, but I'll get your opinion there because I thought it was an intriguing race, the 8th on Saturday at Belmont. Maiden specials going 1 1/16 on the grass. I have it 7-5, 8-2. I took a little pop with Infinite Potential because I like firsters from Chad and Klarovich. But I could point at any of my 4 and probably 3 others and have about an equal level of confidence in this race. So I'm interested to hear your take on race number 8 on Saturday.
So first, my pick 3 play is really simple. My main one is going to be French Empire and All and Promise Keeper. And in this race itself, Of course, you're going to see the Chad Brown bet in Italian off of the neck finish, but honestly, I don't think that's that great of a race. A 65 buyer, a 79 Equibase figure, compared to Palamos, who got an 80 and an 89 last November, and she should be stronger as a four-year-old. I am looking, though, to honestly, the reason I hold is because I think three of the long shots here have a big shot, and I'll try and be quick. Lily Simone is a half to a horse named Vision Perfect, who won 100 grand, 800 grand, I'm sorry, and she debuted in a mile, which I'm going to toss, then three turf sprints. Now she's second off a layoff stretching out. Vision Perfect won her first turf route, and this is the same connections, Robert Spiegel, not Dave Donk. I think somebody else trained her. But there's no reason with Johnny B this filly should be 20-1. Bonkers on the outside for Maker, second off a layoff, second off the claim, ran fourth at a mile. She ran really big at Tampa in her second career start. She made the lead. She was favored at 3-1 back in December 2019, also with a shot. And Flaming Rouge, this is a Kentucky-bred filly who made her first five races in starts in France. Second race got beat a nose in a 12-horse field, a mile and 5/16. She's training here. She gets Rosario and Lasix for Clement. And I will say, the dam Chianti Red has produced four other foals. Every one of them was a turf route winner in straight maiden in the U.S.
I like it. As I say, I think this is an intriguing race, and the clever pick three play will be rooting for you, certainly. Ellis, as always, appreciate the visit. Again, you can find Ellis's Race of the Week every week on Equibase, but also check out work on America's Best Racing, as they say, various websites, racetrack websites. Ellis has selections as well, but also Twitter at UberCapper. Ellis, always appreciate the conversation and the visit. We'll talk again.
Thanks, Seth.
Ellis Starr with some thoughts on this afternoon's Belmont card. Want to take advantage of everything Capital OTB has to offer? Become a Capital Bets account holder today. It's quick and easy. And now for the month of April, it's our new member sign-up bonus. Simply make a minimum deposit of $200, bet $400, and receive a $200 cash bonus deposited directly into your new account. That's $200 free money from Capital OTB, so sign up today and win more with Capital OTB.
Welcome to Albany County, an incredible destination to live, work, and play. With easy connections to more than a dozen cities from our vibrant modern airport, it's a short trip downtown to a hive of culture and amusement. From world-class shows at the newly renovated Times Union Center to reliving the past at the New York State Museum. From outdoor recreation to shopping to nightlife, Albany County has something for everyone. We'll see you soon.
Good afternoon, everybody. This is Pimlico Racetrack in Baltimore, Maryland, for the running of the Preakness, the second and richest jewel in racing's Triple Crown.
They talk about the Kentucky Derby. They talk about the Belmont. But here at the Preakness, there's nothing better.
Welcome back to Racing Across America on this Saturday, the week after the Kentucky Derby. I mentioned at the top of the show, typically the day after the Derby, we'll be joined by Steve Bick, my summertime colleague on Loose on the Lead up at Saratoga, but also the host of SiriusXM's At the Races. But last week, I was a little under the weather, so we missed it, but I couldn't go without a post-Derby visit. Here he is. Steve, good morning.
You're not allowed to be under the weather. You're the Iron Horse. You're the Lou Gehrig of OTB TV.
I like that. The Cal Ripken. Yeah, I like. Well, my streak was broken.
Cal Ripken. You're gonna pretend. You're not going to go with the Lou Gehrig?
No, or either. I was going either or. I was for folks who don't maybe remember Lou Gehrig. I was going with a little Cal Ripken. I was going with either. But yeah, it was a long week. So I mean, I put in plenty of hours last week with the Derby seminar and whatnot, and all the action Oaks and Derby Day in with OTB Live. And it was a great weekend, and we'll get into some of the races in particular. But first, I wanted to. You were down there for a couple of weeks with the radio show. Great work, as always. It's fun to listen to the show because you get all the contenders and the folks looking at the workouts, and people come away from the show that 2 weeks. It's the one race where people really concentrate on the workouts in those 2 weeks of the lead up, and they come away from your show really with some good information. Great job again. But before we get into specifics, I'm just curious. You were down there in September, obviously, for last year's strange Derby, no fans. How was it different this year? And I'm curious, with the 50,000 on Derby Day, can other tracks now look at Churchill for maybe a template like New York? Can they look, or was Derby Day enough of an aberration that maybe they can't work out those kind of things?
No, I think they probably can. And, you know, don't forget, they raced all week. They had racing Tuesday, Wednesday. There was Thurby. The weather was lousy on Thursday. And Oaks Day leading up to Saturday. And you had real crowds, I mean, every single day. And, you know, Marty McGee yesterday on radio with me, Marty suggested there was more than 50,000 there. They may have had to put that number on it because of the parameters that the state, you know, health department set. But Marty, who, as Marty said, I've been to 46 straight. What do I know? But Marty said he thought there was closer to 70,000 there. Ooh. And, you know, that's without the infield. So it was very comfortable from that standpoint. It was so much more fun to have, you know, the whole ambiance and have noise and have, you know, a real atmosphere. And you know, frankly, I think whatever the race might have lacked in intrigue, the crowd more than made up for it in terms of anticipation. They were just, I think everybody was so happy to be there. And then, of course, you'd had the great day on Friday. You know, the weather didn't hurt either. It was just glorious for both days. And the Oaks was so good that I think, you know, it really, you know, fed into Saturday's environment. And, you know, I talked to Pat McKenna this week. The news got better and better for Belmont Stakes Day and then for Saratoga. You know, anybody that lives in the state that's vaccinated, you know, you have that Excelsior pass. You're going to have designated areas, it looks like, at Saratoga, where you'll be shoulder to shoulder. So things are really shaping up nicely. I know Preakness is going to be a little limited next Saturday, 10,000 and change, but we're really working in the right direction, and there's a lot of other racetracks. I was up in Indiana Grand for a day 2 weeks ago, in my first week in Kentucky. I think we're really well on our way, Seth. And Derby Oaks weekend exponentially moved things forward.
Yeah, you mentioned the nice weather Derby Oaks Day, but you also mentioned your trip to Indiana Grand, because I was listening to the radio show the morning you said, I might be up there that afternoon. I was in the afternoon. It was like a blizzard.
It was the strangest drive up to Shelbyville, and there were snow squalls. There was a couple of hailstorms, you know, which that whole Ohio Valley, I lived in Cincinnati, and so I kind of, you know, familiar with the weather patterns. And you go to Derby, this was my 20th straight. The weather is volatile, but that was bizarre. And then by the time I actually got to Indy and to Shelbyville, I had to make a little trip. Had to make a little trip down, you know, to Indianapolis, to Shapiro's, one of the Midwest's great delis. So I zipped up, first time probably in 20 years that I've been to Shapiro's, got a sandwich, then got down to Shelbyville for the racing. And it's funny, I walked in, I watched Randy Klopp, who I had on the radio the week before. Randy Klopp wins the first race I ever see at Indiana Grand. And so I go and introduce myself as he's going to the Windsor. I said, Randy, thanks for the visit on the radio last week. And he said, oh, wow, good to meet. Come on in the wind picture. So I hadn't been in, I literally had not been at the racetrack 8 minutes, and I was in a wind picture. I thought that was a pretty good way to start the visit to Indiana Grand.
Yeah, I was laughing when I was in doing the show because I had heard you say that morning, oh, I'm going up to Indiana Grand. And I thought, yeah, nice springtime visit in the snowstorm.
Yeah, in the snow.
Before we get to specific races as well, you forwarded us some pictures, and I was kind of laughing as I was looking through the pictures. The guys in the control room, I'll have them pull it up, and we were talking before we went on the air. Your lovely wife, Tina Goza, nicknamed Derby Barbie, and she was wearing clearly the Derby Barbie outfit, as we will see, is side-by-side with the actual. That's hilarious. And you said there's a story behind it.
A story goes with it, and it's the craziest, funniest story. You see that Barbie to the right. That Barbie I found in Whittier, California. There's a sprawling antique center. And I used to stay very, very frequently when I went to California, I would stay down in Poco Rivera or Whittier, right in that mid-range. It's halfway basically between Los Al and Santa Anita. And also my favorite restaurant is in Pico, the Dalray. So I started going to this antique center, and I kept seeing that Barbie. This is 10 years ago, 12 years ago. I kept seeing that Barbie. I put the picture back up, and it just kept. And Tina has one other Barbie, which was the Derby Barbie, the year that they Mattel and Churchill had a Derby Barbie, and so that's where the whole nickname came from, 12, 13 years ago. So she doesn't really, she doesn't collect them. But this Barbie, for whatever reason, for like 3 years in a row, I went back to the antique store, and it's like a place with consignments. And it was like $65, I think, or $75. And I thought, it's from like 1962 or 1963. And so finally, I made an offer one on like my third trip. I said to the woman, would you take 40? And they checked with the consigner, and the consigner came back at 50, I think. So I bought it for $45 or $50. So it's been sitting on a shelf next to the actual Derby Barbie for years. There's a clothing store in Burbank called Unique Vintage, where I've gotten Tina a lot of her Triple Crown and Breeders' Cup dresses. I get an email from them, 2 years ago, and introducing the Barbie collection. And there is the dress. From the early 60s, this is one of the dresses that they picked to put into a full-size clothing. I was like dumbfounded. I immediately said, oh my God, I'm buying this for Tina. And so there it is. She's a living doll, my wife. And there it is, Derby Barbie at the Derby in a Barbie dress. The whole thing was like magical.
That's
the craziest thing ever. Right? I mean, the thing is sitting in the house 10 years, and then all of a sudden, here's the dress, one of the, 15 or 20 outfits that they pick from the history of Barbie, and it just so happens that I had found the thing in some, it was like in a display case in a gigantic antique center. I'm telling you, it's just amazing to me.
That's hilarious.
But I'm easily distracted and amused.
No, that is hilarious. Yeah, send in some other pictures as you were making your way around the facility as well. Have you and Lafitte and Nick Luck, and a picture of you and Mrs. Weber. So it does look like a good couple of days down at Churchill, enjoying the action and whatnot. Let's get into the racing, and let's start with the Derby and get your thoughts there. We're going to watch the entire replay. Before we get to that, though, I'll just set it up that I liked Mandalone. I was willing to draw a line through the last race. I thought he was improving before that flop in the Louisiana Derby. A lot of people I talked to last week said, I just can't use a horse that ran sixth in the prep. But I thought, I like Mandalone. I'm going to draw a line through the race. It seems like the kind of field where maybe you can get away with a horse who ran sixth. And then I look up at the odds board on Derby Day, and I was even more excited. And I thought the whole stretch I was going by until maybe the last 60 yards or so, he just couldn't get it done. Medina Spirit goes out, and we'll watch him. Medina Spirit takes the lead under John Velasquez. Velasquez and Baffert, two great human stories on the weekend as well. Hot Rod Charlie third, Essential Quality fourth. It was a nice finish amongst the top four. But again, Medina Spirit and Baffert, with John Velasquez saying, I'm going to get to the lead. He did, and he took them all the way around. Your impressions on the Derby?
Well, there's a lot of interesting things that happen, and you can see here early, you know, first time past the wire, where Soup and Sandwich is now going to press him. Everybody that's going to be involved in the decision is sitting in appropriate spots. The race obviously changed tremendously with the early trouble for Rock Your World. And in addition to getting squeezed, you know, there was also the element of losing the irons. Joel Rosario gets the left, you know, leg out of the irons, and that slows him down even more. So Rock Your World, who would have been, you know, probably in the vanguard, he's out of the picture. So now Medina Spirit, you know that Baffert is going to take advantage of any horse with speed, and Johnny suits that. Johnny goes forward. And that was that. I mean, this race ends up being over really right here in the middle portion, where Medina Spirit gets a little bit of a breather and gets to go that third quarter in 24-2, the fourth quarter in 24-3. And I mean, they're slowing down. Make no mistake, this was a fast early, slow late Derby. It's one of the reasons that none of the closers really impact it. The other thing that's happening is that for whatever reason, Mike Smith, after a little bit of a jerky start for Midnight Bourbon, he also wasn't part of the early pace. So here you are, Essential Quality, who had a little bit of trouble. It wasn't all that damaging. He did lose ground in both turns, and it's going to end up really being the difference. And he didn't have a lot of margin for error, Seth.
Yeah.
And there you can see that's about the margin, a length and a quarter between first and fourth. Mandaloon definitely ran tremendous. You could see all the way around there that Giroux was loaded. He was just, waiting for go time. And, the Baffert horse is always going to be, and this horse in particular, who's already proven. You go back to that Robert Lewis with Hot Rod Charlie. He has proven that he doesn't like to get passed. Not a big horse, but he's tough. And all you had to do was watch all of those workouts of Medina Spirit, six furlong published workouts that actually were a mile workout with another, 16th of a mile gallop out. And Baffert's horses are going to show up to this race ready to run a mile and a quarter. And, not to say that, everybody else is running out of trainer, in that 10th furlong. But the one thing you're not going to have to worry about with Baffert's horses is that they're, if they've got the aptitude to go a 10th furlong, they're going to be fit. And that's the difference with him. And that's why he's won seven of these. They didn't expect to win this. I mean, they thought he would run a better race. Gary Young, who bought him for Amr Zidane, Gary Young, for 2 weeks with me on the show, all he really said was, I think he's going to run better than he ran in the Santa Anita Derby. We're confident of that. At no point did they really say, we really think, he's coming in here and he's the horse to beat. In fact, Gary pretty much was pretty much decided that Rock Your World was much the horse to beat, and that Essential Quality needed to be respected, Hot Rod Charlie. I mean, there were like six horses that figured as the major contenders here, and they basically were, four and even five out of the top six. So this was formful in its own way. I'm surprised Mandaloon's not going forward. Hot Rod Charlie, I don't get him waiting for Belmont. That's weird. Essential Quality, I'm a little, I don't get all these horses bypassing the Preakness. It's very strange, frankly. Midnight Bourbon's coming, and he's going to be a major, major contender next Saturday. But overall, I thought it was, I thought it was exciting. Thought it was a good Derby. It was pretty cleanly run. No real major incidents. Soup and Sandwich flipped his palate. Not going to be a big deal going forward. So everybody comes out good. And it was a derby. It was satisfying.
And as they say, there were, and we've alluded to it talking about it, there were two human stories, obviously. Baffert with a record derby win. But also on the same weekend, he gets the all-time grade one record win.
Yeah.
Establishes it with Gamine and then gets two more grade ones with Dujour and with the Kentucky Derby win to add
grade
to his
two. Grade two for the American Turf's a grade two. But
okay, all right.
But still, yeah.
So Baffert with the record and John Velasquez on the weekend with the Oaks Derby double. It's just yikes.
It's amazing.
At his stage of the career to still be at the top of the game, it was, you know, those two stories on the human side of things really topped the weekend as well.
Completely agree. And you know, I had Johnny on last Monday. Johnny's career looked like it was winding down 3 years ago, give or take. And the odd situation last year around, you know, revolving around Tis the Law, that ended up, you know, breaking up his longstanding, business with Angel Cordero, and puts him in the hands of Ron Anderson. It has been, you can't even call it a career coda. I think yesterday on Thursday with Sean Clancy, I called it a fourth act of his career. Johnny's riding better than he had in years. And Ron Anderson's putting him on, you know, major, major horses. Obviously, Malathat and Search Results was really the other.
And let's take a look at that
portion of the story.
Let's take a look at the Friday feature, the Kentucky Oaks. Malathat's going to be the number 10. I liked Malathat. I had backed up. I had future pools with all others. So I had 12 in the gate on Derby Day, but I backed up with some doubles using using Malathat and the other horses I didn't use. Because I did like Malathat quite a bit. Stays undefeated. Number 10 horse under John Velasquez. Search Results runs second. Will Secret runs third. But I'll note, and I said it when I was in here doing OTV Live in the afternoon, you see the respect the rest of the jockeys have for John Velasquez when they come under the wire, and Irad Ortiz, after a nice little ding-dong battle where Johnny kind of race-rode him, they're coming under the wire. Irad reaches over and gives him a high five under the wire, and that was a nice little moment as well in the Kentucky Oaks. Your thoughts?
Well, this is obviously a filly that is a scary talent. And, we'll see whether they're going to run her in the Belmont. Right now, I don't really see what's going to prevent them from running her in the Belmont. I don't like that term generational talent, but she's a serious, serious filly. And we could have a lot of fun, I think, the rest of the year with her. Search Results ran a game race. I don't know what else she could have done. It looked like actually that Malathat, once she corralled her, she would power away, but Search Results hung in tough. Irad's carrying horses on his shoulders. This was great. I mean, my day revolved around Malathat, and I was singling to her in the pick six and the pick five. So, I had a lot riding on her myself, both emotionally and financially. I mean, look at this. What a great stretch duel this is. It really about as good as it gets. And Search Results never really relents. And, I saw some very silly comments about Irad past the wire. And, somebody saying, oh, it's a bad look. Find another hobby if you think that's a bad look. It's just so stupid. You don't understand that. The leading Puerto Rican rider of his era, Irad, is just enthralled that he's gone this stretch long battle with every Puerto Rican kid's idol, John Velasquez. You can't make that association, and that he congratulates him astride by. There's a great picture that Alex Evers got of Irad holding Johnny's wrist and hand, later on down the stretch around the turn. This was great. It was a perfect way to wrap up Friday, and even though there were two more races, but I think it sent everybody into Derby Day, you know, on a real high.
Even Chad
was not unhappy. I mean, he would have preferred to win that race, but and Seth Klarman, you know, and that team, they were, you know, they handed it to Malathat. Obviously, it was a special week. It was going to end up being a special week for Todd in this setting. You know, days later, getting into the Hall of Fame. You know, one backdrop that could have happened, Seth, here is Shadwell with Sheikh Hamdan having passed away, what, 6-7 weeks ago. And then Mandaloon, a half length, not even, a neck away for Judmont with Prince Khalid having died a couple of months ago. And believe me, on Friday night, I was thinking to myself, Mandaloon's going to win tomorrow, and you're going to have this storyline of, you know, two of the great, you know, the great benefactors of the game having died earlier in the year, winning, you know, with neither of them around to enjoy it, Sheikh Hamdan and you know, Khalid Abdullah. I thought that was an interesting story as well.
Yeah, there were some great human storylines, some intriguing storylines, some great stories. And I agree with you completely. To me, that was fabulous passing the wire with Irad, you know, kind of showing the respect to Johnny coming under the wire. I want to touch on just one more race certainly as well, because one of the better performances of the weekend, we're going to watch the stretch run to the Pat Day Mile. Yeah. We're going to see Jackie's Warrior get it done. Jackie's Warrior is going to be the number three horse. I like Jackie's Warrior coming into this. I thought would be interesting on the cutback and the play in here. And he does get it done by a head. Dream Shake gives him all he can ask for late. But after the race, I tweeted out, man, look at those fractions. And you can see him on the screen. Those fractions are incredible. But I wanted to bring this race up because I heard, you know, I was listening to your radio show this week and you had Andy Beyer on. A lot of people were a little bit disappointed looking at those fractions and whatnot, disappointed with the figure. But it's based the final time. The early fractions were spectacular and Jackie's Warrior was spectacular, but the figure was what the figure was.
Yeah, and Andy wasn't even aware that there was some complaints that that the number, the 91 Beyer, how it came back soft. But the reality is they came home in 26 seconds and change. I mean, they crawled home, and the final time is what it is. People were saying, oh, they, you know, he went as fast, Jackie's Warrior went as fast as Gamin did for 7 furlongs. Yeah, except that he was running 8 furlongs. The pace, you know, takes the starch out of him and he comes home slow. That's the final time. The number absolutely made sense. I don't know if Brian got it quickly enough, but I just sent the picture. I was standing next to Steve Asmussen as he watched the race. And I got a bunch of pictures of him cheering and then him, he actually dove underneath the rail. And Steve Asmussen is not a little guy, but he popped underneath there like a jack in the box. So, Brian, if you got that picture, people will get a kick out of it because Asmussen was like, he was, you know, veins popping watching Jackie's Warrior down the stretch.
He said it's going to take him a second to get that picture, but I got a video of him up at Saratoga, like at the 8th ball watching one of his horses, and he's got that whistle and the snap in the fingers as they're coming to the wire.
He's, come on, Jackie, come on, Jackie, come on, Jackie. And it was great. A terrific race. And, you know, I feel bad for Peter Ertin. Dream Shake ran as well as a horse can run. Be interesting to see how they both of them snap out of that, because that was an absolute knockdown drag out. That, you're right about that, you know, being one of the real highlights of the weekend. There it is. That even that doesn't do it justice, because he was pretty animated. I really enjoyed. There were so many parts of the weekend. It was a perfect couple of days.
Yeah, no question about it. It really was a fun ding dong finishes. The dead heat and the Maxfield was good on Friday. She Dares the Devil, races that will play into the various divisions as the year goes along. Well, we are getting to the top of the hour, but we talked before we went on the air, and I had it written on my page here, and you alluded to it earlier when you mentioned Todd Pletcher. Hall of Fame was announced earlier this week. Todd Pletcher, American Pharoah, getting in. This year's ceremony will include last year's inductees, as well as that ceremony was postponed because of the pandemic. I was surprised with the rules being what they are now. I've been surprised the past couple of years. I look at I'm a voter. I get the ballot and the list and all the information. I think I could easily vote for all of these. I certainly voted for more than two, and I was surprised that only get two got in. For folks that don't know, you get in now with 50% plus one vote. You pass the 50% mark, you get in. And there was only two, and then Jack Fisher got voted in with the Steeplechase Committee as well. But only two, Pletcher and American Pharoah. Two very deserving entrants. I was surprised it was limited to the two, though.
Obviously, in both their first years of eligibility, you know, when it comes to human connections, trainers and jocks, it's 25 years of active service in the game, and then you're eligible. So Todd was obvious. And from what I understand, he may not have been by acclamation, which is bizarre. Anybody, honest to God, and they don't reveal these votes, anybody who didn't vote for Todd Pletcher on their Hall of Fame ballot, it shouldn't be voting. I mean, it's unbelievable. American Pharoah, there might be people who like the people who didn't like that Point Given never faced elders. You know, there is that school of thought. But given what American Pharoah accomplished, you would think that he's acclamation too. But I'm sure he wasn't. The problem, the horse that, you know, should have been in by now is Kona Gold. What's going on with him is bizarre. And what's gone on with sprinters in the Hall of Fame is problematic. There was a huge backlog of sprinters that even were brought in as finalists. It's taken forever. And, you know, Housebuster got in, very subtle, Extra Heat. My Juliet got in the year before last through the Veterans Committee. But there's been this anti-sprinter sentiment, which is pretty bizarre given that American racing is all about speed on dirt. That's our hallmark. But yet we're gonna have some sort of a prejudice against sprinters. It's the craziest thing ever. I understand that the classics are you know, the glamour division, but I don't understand this. Kona Gold, especially if you understand that he was a gelding and the last couple of years of his career when he was 6 and 7 or 7 and 8, you know, he was not the same horse that he was at 3, 4, and 5. The horse appeared in 5 straight Breeders' Cups. He was a champion. He has track records. He had set a Breeders' Cup sprint record. He had 17 triple-digit buyers, 15 of them over 115. I mean, you got to be kidding. If Kona Gold was running today, people would be falling over themselves. And for him to continue to be denied entry to the Hall is really strange. I mean, I thought he should have been elected his first year on the ballot, which was 2014. He could have gone in with Alex Solis, who was his regular rider. That was the right time to elect him. So here he is now, years later. I mean, it seems to me that he's going to end up being put in by the Veterans Committee. There's also the matter of the fact that his trainer, Bruce Headley, died earlier this year. Might have been nice to put him in the Hall while Bruce was alive. I mean, this one, Jay Privman, you know, particularly, I mean, Jay was around on the, you know, obviously on the West Coast for his whole career. And so Jay is even more incensed. I got to see him a bunch of times, Kona Gold, but not like Jay did. I don't get it. I mean, I also voted for Blind Luck, who, you know, Blind Luck, she's right on the border. The people saying that Rags to Riches, I'm sorry, Rags to Riches is not a Hall of Famer. She did something nice and unique, but she doesn't have a Hall of Fame career. She had a, you know, she had a lovely moment winning, you know, winning the Belmont, but that doesn't put you in the Hall of Fame. Havre de Grace, yeah, she was a horse. She was a horse of the year. She's borderline to me. I didn't vote for her, but the Kona Gold is the one that's just crazy that he's having trouble getting over the hump.
I think you might have nailed it. I think there is some weird prejudice against sprinters for these kind of awards. When, as you say, American racing is sprinting, really, mainly. And that plays out also into the number of graded stakes on the schedule. The grade one sprints are lacking.
Well, now, back then, there weren't. Back then, there were only, when Kona Gold ran, there were only four grade ones for sprinters that were sprint-oriented. Kona Gold, actually, I mean, somebody made the case. I'm not going to get into specifics of who. Made the case, well, he only won two grade ones. Yeah. And then if you look at his PPs, you'll see that because of him, several grade twos became grade ones afterward. If you don't have an understanding of the time and place that the horses in question competed, then again, you don't belong on the voter rolls. It's very frustrating, Seth, and I'm not saying that I know better, I am kind of immersed in this, you know, 365 days a year. I got the radio show 250 days, 3 hours a day, for 16 years. I'm kind of invested in the game. It is frustrating that, you know, you've got people that are involved in this process that just don't belong involved in the process.
Yeah,
sorry.
No, I hear you, and I agree that there is a prejudice against the spread, and I think it is tied into I think a lot of people look and where are the grade one? Well, they don't get the chance to run in as many grade ones as the horses go in the two turns, which is, again, surprising, given we're so concentrated on sprint racing in this country that there aren't more grade ones out there for the sprinters during the year. But that's just kind of a fact, which you can't take away from the talent just because they don't have the opportunity just isn't there to put the grade ones on the resume necessarily. Steve, you've got to wrap it up, but appreciate the visit. We were talking before we went on the air. Game plan for you. You're heading down to Baltimore tomorrow. The show will be live from Pimlico all this week.
Live from Old Hilltop, one of my favorite weeks as well. Tough to beat the 2 weeks at in the Ville, but I love going down to Baltimore. We'll do all our usual Baltimore antics and try to bring you the best of Charm City, and go up to Timonium one afternoon with the 2-year-old in training sale. Horses, the Breeze show starts at around, I think it starts Wednesday. So there's lots to look forward to. Right now, I guess we're looking at, looks like a field of probably 9, maybe 10. For people that didn't hear, Chad is going to run Risk Taking. So both Risk Taking and Crowded Trade, the two Bafferts, Midnight Bourbon, Ron Bauer, there's that, you know, the horse from Dubai, France Go De Ina, who picked up Rosario, Diodoro, Keep Me In Mind, and they're waiting for a decision from Lucas on Ram. So 2 days of racing that are always great. Weather looks like it's going to be all right. So hi-ho, Pimlico we go.
Are you a crab cake guy?
What kind of question is that? Of course I'm a crab. Am I a crab cake guy? I heard Migliore
bring it up on the radio show. The idea I've mentioned, we got to get you in with like Discovery or one of those, the racetrack foodie.
We'll do it. Rich and I might do a thing, but for the crab cake people, we have a bit of an offbeat selection as our favorite. It's actually the prime rib. The prime rib downtown. It has got, for me, the best crab cake. Tina and I will go Saturday night probably to G&M. In Linthicum Heights, which famously, as I say, makes a crab cake the size of a baby's head. And there's Michael's up in Timonium. Up by Timonium, Michael's is famous. Everybody loves. That's Baffert's favorite. There's also the Corner Stable. And the Corner Stable is also a rib joint, but they've got great crab cakes. There's Fraidley's as well. And I mean, we've got all the joints. The unsung hero. The unsung culinary hero in around Baltimore is actually the Pit Beef Sandwich, which is a roast beef wafer thin dipped in au jus on a hard roll. Ooh. Out of this world. Pit Beef.
I like that. I like that. And before we let you go, you mentioned two-year-olds at Timonium. I'm just curious. I've seen, you know, doing the afternoon show, certainly seeing some DT horses run over the past few weeks down in New York. You have any two-year-olds lined up for this year?
We'll keep looking. It's been very tough to nail a two-year-old. OBS, we had eyes on a couple different horses. We bid on two horses. There was one thought maybe 30, maybe up to 40,000. The thing went for 90,000. Actually, I think it ended up at 105. That was crazy. Then on the last day of OBS, thought one might be able to get one, you know, kind of inexpensive, maybe around 20. That one went for like 40. It's been very tough. So we'll watch at Timonium. And if we can't get one at Timonium, we'll look at OBS June. But I would like to get one. We've got, you know, the baby. We got a beautiful Motown colt out of Volturine, and she's down in Maryland right now. She's going to be covered by Mosler for next year. And Carlisle Bell was covered by Leah Frick his first year, and he's down at Rock Ridge, Leray Visage, and so Carlisle Bell's going to have herself a Leah Frick baby.
Nice. Always like to root for the DT runners, and always like to root for Steve Bicken at the races on SiriusXM. Again, looking forward to the lead up to the Preakness in this coming week. Steve, appreciate the visit. Glad we got in a little Derby recap.
Happy that you're feeling better. It wasn't the trip home from Kentucky without me, you know, yapping for an hour while Tina's driving. And I missed you actually this week. We'll get to you this week.
Sounds good. Looking forward to it. Steve, appreciate the visit.
Thanks.
Steve Bick, Sirius and XM's At the Races. Check it out this week for a nice lead up to the Preakness. All right. Once again, I will remind you that today there is an online knockout challenge. Go to the website for more information on that. Next couple of days, there's a little activity here at the Racebook. Today, it's a $100 trifecta challenge. Tomorrow, it is the Play the Board Handicapping Contest. Both of those taking place today and tomorrow right here at the Clubhouse Racebook, 711 Central Avenue in Albany. All right. Thanks to our friend Steve Bick. Thanks a little earlier to Ellis Starr for giving us a little preview, a little review on this edition of Racing Across America. I will be back with more afternoon preview and review on OTB Live in about an hour and a half or so. We'll jump in with some action for Saturday afternoon. I'll take a look at a little Pimlico, a little Churchill, a little Belmont as well. Great stakes card at Belmont today, so you can tune in for all of that coming up a little bit later on OTB Live. But I appreciate your tuning in this morning. I'm Seth Merrill. This has been Racing Across America. Once again, thanks for tuning in. We'll see you in, as they say, about an hour and a half or so with OTB Live. See you then.
You're watching OTB TV, a service of Capital Off-Track Betting.